Alien mummies and apocalyptic AI, all that and more on today's JPD Weekly. Welcome to JPD Weekly. I am Josh Peck. I'm doing much better. Thank you all for your prayers and support. For those of you who are just joining us, I went through knee surgery and all that stuff. Last week was a little difficult for me. It's still a little difficult, but I'm getting better. I'm hanging in there. I'll probably do a shorter show today. I got four stories that I want to go through instead of the typical 7 to 10. But that's okay. It's going to be fun. We're going to have a blast. So the first thing I want to talk about is Fox News just put out this article, which was interesting. Alien mummy DNA probe may have crossed ethical lines. And I've heard about this this interpretation before. But do you remember that that severely elongated head of a preserved skeleton found in it was the Peru's Atacama Desert in 2003. I mean, this thing is so unusual that it initially prompted people to suggest that the diminutive body was that of an extraterrestrial. I mean, even a whole documentary was based around this thing called Sirius, Dr. Stephen Greer. But since then, DNA testing confirmed that the remains, which measure about 6 inches long, belonged to a human fetus that researchers named Ada. But the scientists who conducted that investigation and published their findings in March have recently come under fire for their methods. So on July 18th, another group of researchers presented an evaluation of the earlier study, publishing an analysis in the International Journal of Paleopathology. They criticized the prior research, suggesting that its conclusions about the skeleton's so-called abnormalities, such as missing ribs, reflected an incomplete understanding of normal fetal development. That mistaken interpretation of the remains led the scientists to proceed with DNA extraction that damaged parts of the skeleton. Their investigation, which did not include any Chilean researchers, may have sidestepped protocols that typically monitor the ethics of research conducted with human remains, as their publication omitted, quote, a sufficient ethics statement or archaeological permit, end quote. Christina Kilgrove, co-author of the new study and assistant professor of anthropology at the University of West Florida, wrote in an article for Forbes. Now, in this new paper, the authors pointed out that the mummy's unusual-looking skull and body were not necessarily the result of anomalies, as the previous research suggested. Rather, the skull could have been elongated by vaginal delivery of the preterm fetus, while heat and pressure underground after the body was buried could have further compressed the cranium, the scientists reported. The authors of this new analysis also questioned the earlier research's suggestion that novel mutations could explain the mummy's size. The authors noted that skeletal development at the fetus suspected age, 15 weeks, would not have been affected by the genetic variants that the researchers described in the previous study. Now, because the remains are thought to be just a few decades old, studying them raises ethical concerns that the March study did not adequately address, the scientists in the new study said. Furthermore, as DNA extraction can destroy some of the body's tissues, additional restrictions typically apply for such an examination. And it is unclear from the prior study that DNA sampling was required to begin with. That's also what the researchers said. The authors wrote, quote, unfortunately, there was no scientific rationale to undertake genomic analysis of Ada because the skeleton is normal. End quote. And again, the authors wrote that in the new study, adding that the whole genome testing previously performed was unnecessary and unethical. They also said, quote, we caution DNA researchers about getting involved in cases that lack clear context and legality or where the remains have resided in private collections, end quote. The study authors also concluded. So what do you think about this? I would like to know in the comment section below. Go ahead and leave me a comment. Do you think that all this is all this is warranted, or do you think that it's all just garbage and it was a little alien that was found? I'd like to know what you think. Leave me a comment in the comment section below. There has been a recent finding, not really a recent finding, but it's coming to light more. We could say it like that, that an EMP risk, while not too long ago it would have seemed in the realm of conspiracy, it's really not a sideshow. You know, I mean, one cyber attack could actually wipe out 90 percent of the U.S. population. So here's a story on that. So in the past 8 months, federal authorities have issued public warnings about foreign hackers penetrating the U.S. power grid and other critical infrastructure. Cybersecurity experts say that the intent is to plant digital grenades in those systems until they decide to pull the pin. Now, these attacks are from an enemy who may never step on U.S. soil, but they could cripple vital systems like electricity, food, water, manufacturing, all sorts of things. Robert Lee, founder and CEO of Dragos Incorporated, says, quote, right now we are tracking about eight different teams that specifically target industrial networks, end quote. Now, Lee spent 5 years working at the National Security Agency and Pentagon Cyber Command before forming Dragos Incorporated. Lee and his crew protect industrial control systems by acting like detectives investigating a new crime scene. So Mark Sitz is a threat analyst for Dragos. And he says, quote, they're leaving breadcrumbs the entire way through. They are giving us pieces to find their behaviors until they get to that impact, end quote. Now, working from a warehouse in Hanover, Maryland, Dragos employees track foreign hacking groups in real time, then hunt them down to prevent damage to facilities that produce oil, gas, and other energy. Lee says, quote, we've seen these are not theoretical attacks. My team was involved in the two different Ukraine attacks, Ukraine 2015 and 2016, a national level adversary compromised a portion of their power grid and were able to turn off the lights in those regions, end quote. Now, Lee also says that these cyber enemies are now going way beyond controlling light switches, that they're starting to see really aggressive behavior. So an attack on the United States could create casualties on a massive scale. Research shows a cyber attack on the power grid that shuts off electricity would potentially leave millions of Americans without food, clean water, access to money, healthcare, and more. So Dan Coats, who's the director of national intelligence and at a congressional hearing on national security threats, said, quote, frankly, the United States is under attack by entities that are using cyber to penetrate virtually every major action that takes place in the United States, end quote. Coats also told Congress that cyber weapons exist in the hands of not only countries, but also terrorists and other activists. So he says, quote, while Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea pose the greatest cyber threats, other nation states, terrorist organizations, transnational criminal organizations, and other more capable groups of individuals use cyber operations to achieve strategic objectives, end quote. Dr. Peter Pry, executive director for the Task Force on National and Homeland Security, agrees. And he was the one that actually said that it's not a sideshow. He says, quote, this is the primary way our enemies would come after us in a future war, cyber, physical sabotage, and nuclear EMP attack, end quote. Now, Pry worked on the U.S. Commission assessing the threat of an electromagnetic pulse or an EMP attack, which would wipe out electrical systems. So as an example, he says a country like North Korea could target the U.S. by transporting a nuclear weapon over the South Polar region, then detonating it to create a high-altitude EMP. A congressional report shows such an attack could shut down the U.S. power grid indefinitely, and that could lead to the deaths of up to 90% of all Americans within a year. So how much would it cost to secure our power grids? In 2008, the EMP Commission estimated it would cost around $2 billion. But former CIA Director James Woolsey said that the amount to strengthen the grid would likely be in the tens of billions of dollars. But still, Pry says the D.C. bureaucracy and political influence prevents that from happening. So Pry says, quote, the electric power industry doesn't want to do it. They have vast lobbying resources on K Street. They own basically the U.S. Federal Regulatory Commission, which recently defied Secretary of Energy Perry in his effort to come up with a more secure power grid. They actually defied the Secretary of Energy. End quote. Okay, now another major issue. While larger utilities have beefed up cyber defense, smaller regional companies often overlook the need for such security. So John Felker, who's the DHS Director of National Security, says, quote, anywhere between 80 to 90% of the critical infrastructure in this country is held in private hands. Other than the regulators, there is no real control over doing the things that you need to do, doing the basic blocking and tackling of cyber hygiene and so forth. So end quote. So since our critical infrastructure depends on each other, Homeland Security holds exercise like Cyberstorm 6. It simulates various cyber attacks simultaneously on a variety of facilities, forcing federal, state, and local agencies to work with private companies to quickly find solutions. Now, I know I'm quoting a lot of people here, but the reason that I'm doing this, I want to quote a lot of professionals to show how serious this actually is. This isn't just a conspiracy theory. Jeanette Manfra, the Assistant Secretary of National Cybersecurity, said, quote, the ability to exercise how we coordinate, how we collaborate, how we share information, because that is just as important, as we've seen in real life situations as the technical means of identifying who's doing it and get them off the computers, end quote. So bottom line, enemies, both big and small, want to plant cyber sleeper weapons within our infrastructure so they can eventually use them to destroy our way of life. And the challenge will be ensuring a full team effort between government and private enterprise to fully protect us. So I'd like to know what you think. Are you still, are you thinking that it's still a conspiracy theory, that this isn't really likely to happen? Or do you think that this is real? And if so, what can we do about it? That's what I would like to know. Leave me a comment in the comment section below. So should we take UFO sightings seriously? A physicist and former NASA researcher Kevin Newth argues that blanket skepticism about extraterrestrial craft is not sustainable. Derek Gilbert and I wrote about this in our book, The Day the Earth Stands Still, along with many other things, which if you're interested, you can go to joshpeckdisclosure.com. You can find a link to get it there, and it'll probably be included with a big bundle of things. Defender Publishing is awesome. They always include their books with a bunch of different other books. You get some pretty cool packages that you can't get on Amazon. But, you know, the big question is, are we alone? And unfortunately, neither of the answers really feels satisfactory because, you know, to be alone in this vast universe is a lonely prospect. But on the other hand, if we're not alone and there is someone or something more powerful out there, that too is terrifying. So as a NASA research scientist and now professor of physics, This person who is writing this article attended the 2002 NASA Contact Conference, which focused on serious speculation about extraterrestrials. And this article, again, comes straight from Cosmos Magazine. So during the meeting, apparently a concerned participant said loudly in a sinister tone, you have absolutely no idea what's out there. And the silence was palpable as the truth of the statement sunk in. You know, humans are fearful of extraterrestrials visiting Earth, but perhaps, fortunately, the distances between the stars are prohibitively vast. So at least this is what, you know, we novices who are just learning to travel into space tell ourselves. So, of course, there's a lot to examine with this big question. And you know, of course, there's a lot to examine with us as Christians, too, because is this a question that Christians should even be considering? And that, again, that's something that Derek and I wrote heavily about in The Day the Earth Stands Still. And we reason, yes, we should be considering this question. Now, that doesn't mean that we're in support of life in the universe or not in support of it. Actually, Derek and I take the position that the question of alien life in the universe is divorced from the UFO phenomenon that we see on planet Earth. We think those are two different things. So people can get the book or they can check out the free interviews that we've done online for it. So this brings up the Fermi paradox. The nuclear physicist Enrico Fermi was famous for posing the thought-provoking question. In 1950 at Los Alamos National Laboratory, after discussing UFOs over lunch, Fermi asked, where is everybody? He estimated that there were about 300 billion stars in the galaxy, many of them billions of years older than the sun, with a large percentage of them likely to host habitable planets. But even if intelligent life developed on a very small percentage of these planets, then there should be a number of intelligent civilizations in the galaxy. Depending on the assumptions, one should expect anywhere from tens to tens of thousands of civilizations. And with the rocket-based technologies that we've developed for space travel, it would take somewhere between 5 and 50 million years for a civilization like ours to colonize our Milky Way galaxy. Since this should have happened several times already in the history of our galaxy, one should wonder, where is the evidence of all these civilizations? So this discrepancy between the expectation that there should be more evidence of alien civilization or visitations and the presumption that no visitations have been observed has been dubbed the Fermi paradox. Now, UFOs seem to be taboo for professional scientists. You know, when it comes to science, the scientific method requires hypotheses to be testable so that inferences can be verified. But UFO encounters are neither controllable nor repeatable, which makes their study extremely challenging. But the real problem is that the UFO topic is just taboo by nature. Now, while the general public has been fascinated with UFOs for decades, our government, scientists, and media have essentially declared that all of the UFO sightings are a result of weather phenomenon or human actions. I'll just say, for the sake of saying it, Derek and I don't believe that. We don't believe that it's all just mistaken identity. None are actually extraterrestrial spacecraft, according to scientists. No aliens have visited Earth, basically. And essentially, we're told that the topic is nonsense. UFOs are off limits to serious scientific study and rational discussion, which unfortunately leaves the topic in the domain of fringe and pseudoscientists, many of whom litter the field with conspiracy theories and wild speculation. That's why Derek and I, in our book, took a very scientific approach, and we laid out step by step by step how we came to our conclusions. We didn't start writing that book with a conclusion in mind. We let the research guide where our conclusion would eventually land. And we were both surprised to find out that our conclusion while writing the book, our conclusion turned out different than we thought it might have been when we first started. That's the right way to write a book. You don't start out with the conclusion. You don't start out, you research a topic and you bring the reader along your journey of discovery and research. So we did that in The Day the Earth Stands Still. Now, UFO skepticism has become something of like a religion with an agenda, you know, discounting the possibility of extraterrestrials without scientific evidence. Now, you could say the same on the other hand, that UFO fanaticism is like a religion, that they accept extraterrestrials without scientific evidence. So the same could be said on both sides. So, of course, there's evidence that people bring up supposedly from government documents that may or may not be true, but it's worthy of serious study. You know, that's the main point. There's a great deal of evidence that a small percentage of UFO sightings are unidentified structured craft in some way, exhibiting flight capabilities beyond any known human technology. Now, while there's no single case for which there exists evidence that would stand up to scientific rigor, there are cases with simultaneous observations by multiple reliable witnesses, along with radar returns, photographic evidence, things like that, revealing patterns of activity that are pretty compelling. Now, declassified information from covert studies is interesting, but not scientifically helpful. And this is a topic worthy of open scientific inquiry until there's a scientific consensus based on evidence rather than prior expectation or belief. So if there are indeed extraterrestrial craft visiting Earth, it would greatly benefit us to know about them, their nature, and their intent. And moreover, this would present a great opportunity for mankind, promising to expand and advance our knowledge and technology, as well as reshaping our understanding of the place in the universe. Now, that is the argument for scientists. You know, that should be the argument that appeals to scientists. Now, for Christians, it would be more along the lines of, if these are not physical, if these are spiritual or extra-dimensional craft, we should probably want to know about that. And if it is something physical, then we need to know if it's some other country's technology, or we do need to know if it's something off-world that we just don't know about yet. And in which case we would want to study it too. So, you know, we as Christians might have a different conclusion, or a different interpretation is probably the right word, than scientists would. But that argument that I laid out just a minute ago, that one should be the argument that should convince scientists. Unfortunately, it doesn't. So do I want scientists to study this phenomena? Yes, I do. And I think they should take it seriously because, you know, truth be told, we all have our beliefs about it and we all have our own interpretations, but none of us knows for absolute sure. Not a single one of us knows for absolute 100% sure. So I think that it would be a good thing to know, especially if there's any chance that they pose any threat. But hey, maybe I'm wrong. And if I'm wrong, I want you to tell me how I'm wrong. Leave me a comment in the comment section below. Okay. Have you heard of Google Translate's artificial intelligence supposedly speaking in apocalyptic prophecies lately when you type in certain things? So artificial intelligence algorithms, they've been known to do some really weird things when left to their own devices. And the ones that power Google Translate have been showing a weird tendency to translate gibberish, basically, from obscure languages into bizarre-sounding prophecies in English. A subreddit devoted to an odd and interesting results from Google Translate noticed the pattern in recent weeks. For example, repeatedly typing dog and translating it from a language like Hawaiian would yield interesting results, such as, so dog like 15 times or something like that. I don't know exactly how many this is. Actually, I think this is 16 times. From Hawaiian to English comes out to say, doomsday clock is 3 minutes at 12. We are experiencing characters and a dramatic developments in the world, which indicate that we are increasingly approaching the end times and Jesus' return. If you put dog in 8 times, it says, it translates from Hawaiian to English. Do you want a dog to accept Jesus and be saved? So then Vice's motherboard site began experimenting and discovering that typing AG repeatedly, the two letters AG repeatedly, and translating it from Irish resulted in other strange translations into English, such as a result, the total number of members of the tribe of the Sons of Gershon was 150,000. And another one, as the name of the Lord was written in the Hebrew language, it was written in the language of the Hebrew nation. Motherboard said that some people on Twitter suggested ghosts or demons were behind the translation, or that they were drawn from private messages. A Google spokesperson denied that, telling Motherboard, this is simply a function of inputting nonsense into the system to which nonsense is generated. Ouch. I don't know, calling Bible stuff nonsense. But whatever the reason, the translation was a fascinating glimpse into the strange things that AI can produce, such as things that appear to be speaking in tongues, even. So there's articles about that you can find out. But what do you think is causing this? I don't know if I would go as far as aliens and demons or whatever, but I also don't think that it's just gibberish in, gibberish out. Because why is it biblically based apocalyptic prophecies? Why is it that? That's a really specific, if you want to call it gibberish, that's a really specific point of gibberish, it's biblical. It's not Islamic apocalyptic prophecies. It's not apocalyptic prophecies from something else. It's not just the word cat translated back over and over and over again. So why? I don't think that it's just random and nonsense and gibberish. I think probably what happened is there's some computer programmer that's having fun with people. I think it's probably that. But I'm interested to know what you all think. So leave me a comment in the comment section below. All right. Like I said, we have a short one this week. I'm going to conclude it there. I'm still getting over surgery, still trying to get out of this, but plus I just gave you a fantastic interview with Michaela Peterson yesterday, so that should satiate you until next Friday. Thank you all so much for the prayers and support and encouragement and donations and all that. You guys are amazing. I love you all, and I really couldn't do any of this without you, so I really greatly appreciate you. I hope everything is going well with each and every one of you. You're in my prayers. As I'm happy to know that I'm in yours. So thank you so much. And until next week, take care and God bless. You can help fight against censorship by making a one-time donation or setting up a monthly donation to Josh Peck Disclosure at joshpeckdisclosure.com/donate. Or, for as little as $1 a month, you can become a Peck patron by heading over to patreon.com/joshpeck. As a Peck patron, you will be entered into contests to have your content featured on the Josh Peck Disclosure homepage, contribute chapters to a collaborative book with Josh Peck, and win a special Josh Peck collection full of materials worth hundreds of dollars. Also, for as little as $3 a month, you will have access to free downloads of Josh Peck books, such as Quantum Creation, Cherubim Chariots, and more. Josh Peck Disclosure is viewer-funded. Head on over to joshpeckdisclosure.com for more information. Right now, head on over to joshpeckdisclosure.com, the central hub for everything Josh Peck Disclosure. Every day, you'll get brand new videos, podcasts, updates, and more. Make sure you subscribe at youtube.com/joshpeckdisclosure. Also, make sure you click the bell and select the option to always be notified when a new video is released. Follow Josh Peck Disclosure on Twitter at jpdisclosure and get involved with the show on our official Facebook page at facebook.com/joshpeckdisclosure. Disclosure. If you're on Steemit and prefer DTube, follow Josh Peck at steemit.com/@Josh Peck and make sure to upvote all Josh Peck Disclosure DTube videos. Keep checking back at joshpeckdisclosure.com for news, information, updates, and more.